Good morning. This is Artificially Intelligent News for Friday, September 4th, 2026. I'm Mark Ellison. This AI-created briefing has been fact-checked against official records and authoritative reporting available early this morning. A federal judge in Maryland has blocked the Trump administration's latest effort to limit birthright citizenship. U.S. District Judge Deborah Boardman issued a preliminary injunction while a class-action lawsuit brought by immigrant families and advocacy groups proceeds. The administration had described its order as aimed at birth tourism, but the judge said Supreme Court precedent establishes that children in the certified class are citizens at birth. Birthright citizenship is rooted in the 14th Amendment and current law, with narrow exceptions. The case is focused on what government agencies may do while the broader constitutional dispute is litigated. A preliminary injunction is an interim measure issued before a full trial or final appeal, and it reflects the court's assessment at this early stage rather than a permanent resolution. This is not a final ruling on the administration's policy. It does mean the government cannot enforce this version against the people covered by the class while the case moves forward. The administration had argued that the challenge came too early and that agencies would rely on guidance that had not yet been issued. The court disagreed at this stage. Voting rules are also headed into a consequential day. North Carolina is scheduled to begin broadly sending mail ballots today, the first state to do so for November's midterm elections. That comes as the administration again asks the Supreme Court to let it proceed with restrictions ordered by President Trump. The latest emergency appeal follows a Boston judge's decision halting the plan. Emergency appeals can produce temporary action from the justices before the lower court case is fully decided, so the request does not itself answer the underlying legal questions. Those questions are still unresolved. Under the executive order, the Postal Service could refuse to deliver ballots from states that do not provide lists of eligible voters and use a uniform envelope style. Election officials say ballots will go out as planned in North Carolina. The larger concern is practical. Rules and systems affecting a voting method used by roughly one-third of voters remain subject to fast-moving litigation just as more states prepare their mailings this month. The midterm map is changing in courtrooms as well. Maryland's highest court ruled that a Democratic-backed proposal for a congressional redistricting amendment must appear on the November ballot. The court reversed two lower court rulings, although it ordered the ballot summary rewritten. That distinction matters because the court cleared the question for voters while requiring the language describing it to be revised. The measure itself would still need voter approval. Supporters see it as a response to Republican-led redistricting efforts in other states. And on the same day, Missouri's Supreme Court unanimously blocked a Trump-backed congressional map from being used in November unless voters first approve it statewide. Missouri's Attorney General says she will seek U.S. Supreme Court review. The contrasting rulings do not decide control of Congress. They do underscore how state courts, state constitutions, and ballot questions are now central to a national fight over House districts before a closely contested midterm election. The legal path can differ sharply from state to state, even when each dispute carries national political implications. In Minneapolis, an Immigration and Customs Enforcement officer has been taken into federal custody on charges of making false statements to investigators about the January shooting of a Venezuelan man. Christian Castro is accused in connection with the non-fatal shooting of Julio Cesar Sosa Celis during the federal immigration operation in the Twin Cities. Federal authorities initially accused Sosa Celis and another man of assaulting an officer with a broom handle and a snow shovel. Prosecutors later dropped charges against the men after video evidence raised questions about the officers' accounts. Minnesota has separately charged Castro with assault and false reporting of a crime. Those are allegations, not convictions, and the federal and state cases remain separate proceedings. The Department of Homeland Security previously called the state prosecution unlawful and politically motivated. Castro had been suspended without pay during the federal investigation. The case has become a closely watched test of accountability during large-scale immigration enforcement. A separate Minneapolis story has left two residents dead and several people hurt. Police say Carlton Johnson shot two neighbors in an apartment building Wednesday afternoon, wounded five other people, and was then killed by responding officers. Two officers were among those shot. Another was injured in the response. Authorities say the first 911 call came shortly after 4:30 in the afternoon, and officers entered the building in less than 2.5 minutes. Reporting on the investigation shows residents had complained that the suspect threatened neighbors, displayed a gun, and said he planned to shoot people. Police had investigated a June report involving a weapon, but the county attorney's office did not file charges. Those earlier warnings will now be part of the public scrutiny surrounding a devastating incident. including questions about what information was available before the shooting and how it was handled. The injured officers were reported in stable condition. New federal tariffs on imported drones and drone components took effect Thursday. Customs and Border Protection says the additional duties range from 10% to 100%, depending on the product and its origin. The highest 100% rate covers specified larger drones, drones with thermal imaging, docking stations, and certain critical components. A 25% tariff applies to many smaller drones without thermal imaging. The White House says the Section 232 action addresses national security concerns and is intended to encourage domestic production and reduce reliance on foreign supply chains. A tariff is paid when covered goods enter the country, so its eventual effect can depend on contracts, inventories, replacement parts, and the choices made by importers and buyers. The proclamation includes lower rate treatment in defined circumstances for qualifying trade partners and an onshoring program for companies whose U.S. production plans are approved. For public safety agencies, farmers, filmmakers, and businesses that use imported equipment, the practical question is how quickly the duties affect procurement costs and available models. It also puts fresh attention on whether domestic suppliers can meet demand for specialized systems and components. And the U.S. Forest Service says it will close 23 research and development facilities in more than a dozen states as part of a broader reorganization. Associate Chief Chris French says research will continue at other sites, and that 95 employees at the facilities scheduled for closure will be shifted within their commuting areas. The agency says it expects the closures, along with other planned changes, to save about $16 million. 41 other facilities initially considered for closure will remain open after concerns from lawmakers and local officials. The research spans wildfire, invasive species, water resources, and forest management. Those are subjects with direct consequences for communities, land managers, and the agency's decisions across a changing landscape. Conservation groups argue that consolidation could weaken access to science and protection for habitat, air, and water. The administration says the goal is to control facility costs and place more of the agency's leadership closer to the western landscapes it manages. Overseas, the United States and Iran remain locked in an escalating conflict with direct consequences for American forces, U.S. allies, and energy markets. Vice President J.D. Vance said Thursday that he would not call the conflict a war, even as the fighting has now lasted about 6 months. That description does not reduce the scale of the confrontation or its risks. The conflict has involved repeated attacks and strikes, while the countries around the Gulf must weigh their own security needs alongside the presence of U.S. forces and vital energy infrastructure. Iran fired missiles and drones toward Kuwait Thursday, according to Kuwait's defense ministry. The ministry said its air defenses intercepted them. The attacks followed further U.S. strikes on Iranian targets earlier this week and add to the pressure on Gulf countries that host American forces and sit near major oil export routes. There is also a grave civilian protection question. Iranian state media reported that 4 people were killed when a U.S. missile hit a home where a wedding was being held. U.S. Central Command says it is looking into the report. Vance said the United States does not target civilians and that the incident was under investigation. That claim has not been independently resolved, and the situation could change quickly. In Nepal, search and rescue operations continue more than a week after catastrophic flooding along the Bodikoshi River near the China border. Nepal's foreign ministry said Thursday afternoon that 1,252 bodies had been recovered and about 4,216 people remained missing. It said nearly 12,000 people had been rescued. The figures illustrate both the scale of the disaster and the uncertainty that remains in areas where access is still limited. Recovery totals and missing person counts can change as teams reach isolated communities and continue to identify people affected by the flooding. There was one remarkable development. 2 workers were pulled alive from a flooded hydropower tunnel 9 days after the disaster. But hundreds of workers remain missing across damaged hydropower projects, and difficult terrain, mud, and washed-out roads continue to slow access. Nepal says teams from India, China, and South Korea are working with the Nepali army on tunnel rescues. The government has said the immediate priorities remain finding survivors, helping displaced people, and assessing damage. The scale of the missing person count means the human toll may continue to rise as remote areas are reached. Turning to money, these are final closes from Thursday's completed U.S. trading session, not futures or intraday figures. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 53,686.11, up 624.16 points, or 1.18%. The S&P 500 finished at 7,747.71, up 81.11 points, or 1.06%. The NASDAQ Composite closed at 26,584.06, a gain of 366.23 points, or 1.40%. Stocks rose as Treasury yields eased and big technology companies rallied. A central reason was new guidance from Federal Reserve Governor Christopher Waller. He said he would be inclined to support holding the federal funds rate at its current 3.50 to 3.75% range if upcoming inflation data continues to show improvement. For markets, that message matters because interest rate expectations influence the cost of borrowing and the value investors place on future earnings. Lower Treasury yields can support stock prices, particularly for companies whose expected profits are weighted further into the future. That is not a promise of a pause. Waller said a hot August inflation reading could lead him to consider a rate increase at the September 15th and 16th meeting. He said three-month core inflation through July was 3.05%, still above the Fed's 2% goal. The August employment report is due from the Bureau of Labor Statistics at 8:30 this morning Eastern Time. August inflation data follows September 11th. Together, those reports will help shape expectations for the Fed's next decision, borrowing costs, and the bond market after a volatile stretch driven by inflation, debt, and Middle East risk. In sports, the NBA has handed the Los Angeles Clippers one of the stiffest penalties in league history for salary cap circumvention. The league suspended owner Steve Ballmer for 1 year, fined the team $30 million, and ordered it to forfeit 5 first-round draft picks, one in each draft from 2029 through 2033. Kawhi Leonard was fined $700,000. Basketball operations president Lawrence Frank received a 6-month ban, and business operations president Jillian Zucker was suspended for a year. The penalties followed an investigation involving a $28 million endorsement agreement with Aspiration Fund Advisor, which later filed for bankruptcy. The Clippers had repeatedly said they expected to be cleared. The league's ruling reaches beyond this franchise because it signals how aggressively the NBA is prepared to police arrangements outside a player's standard contract when it believes those deals may be used to evade cap rules. The loss of draft picks also affects the team's future options for adding young talent or making trades. College football faces a far stranger eligibility fight. A Louisiana judge issued a preliminary injunction against the NCAA, clearing the way for LSU to place some former NFL players on its roster, while the dispute continues in court. The decision arrived just before LSU had to submit its 105-man Southeastern Conference roster and days before the 11th-ranked Tigers open against Clemson. Attorneys for the athletes argue that players should be allowed a fifth season even after attempting professional careers. The SEC has warned of serious consequences for schools that use former pros and has filed a separate federal lawsuit against LSU. This injunction is not a final ruling and does not settle which players will be eligible for games. But it is another example of courts reshaping rules once considered basic to college sports, when a player's college career ends and how leagues can enforce eligibility standards. For now, the roster question remains tied to an ongoing legal dispute rather than a settled NCAA rule. A quick scoreboard from Thursday. In Major League Baseball, the Pittsburgh Pirates beat the San Francisco Giants 5-2. The Toronto Blue Jays defeated the Cleveland Guardians 6-3. At the U.S. Open, Coco Gauff beat Paula Badosa 6-4, 7-6 in the evening session. Taylor Fritz routed Mattia Bellucci 6-0, 6-1, 6-1, and Naomi Osaka advanced after a 3-set win over Katerina Siniakova 6-2, 5-7, 6-2. Finally, a major voice in American culture has died. Gloria Steinem was 92. The journalist, author, and activist co-founded Ms. Magazine and became one of the most recognizable figures of the modern women's movement. Steinem began as a writer and reporter, including a famous 1963 undercover article on working conditions at a Playboy club. She later helped create Men's Is in 1971, combining journalism with an explicit focus on women's lives, rights, and political power. That work made her a prominent public figure, but her influence also came from sustained organizing, speaking, and writing across decades of social and political change. For more than 6 decades, she spoke at campuses, community centers, rallies, and marches, remaining active in public life well beyond the era that made her famous. Tributes have come from political leaders, writers, and activists across generations. Her final memoir, An Unexpected Life, is due out in the coming weeks. That is your morning briefing. If this calm morning summary was useful, follow Artificially Intelligent News and share it with one person who would value it. I'm Mark Ellison. Stay informed, stay curious, and take care.